Hey, welcome to The Weekend. It's time for Group Chat, the place where everyone comes together to talk all things pop culture, whether it's music.
Yeah, Beyonce has 11 nominations.
I think that's aggressive.
including album of the year.
I am happy that she is getting some play.
Mm-hmm. Movies and TV.
In comedy, like, we had memes, we had GIFs, we had people being Rickrolled, we had That's What She Said, we had, you know, like, we had all that stuff. So I think it's also just
it's
where
like
we are in
part
time.
Part of the trend, yeah.
How do you know when to move on? How do you know when something's stale?
How long do we do Chuck Norris jokes for?
Or sports moments that have everyone talking.
If you're watching a television show and somebody's wearing a Bills jersey, like, they're going to notice that and zoom in on that Bills jersey and be like, I like this show, I like these characters. Somebody who doesn't really necessarily care about the Bills, or maybe they follow a different team, they're not going to see that, they're not going to have that same connection, because their perceptual ability is just, it's a different set of references.
Group Chat brings you all the pop culture action with sharp insight, fun debates, and a whole lot of laughter.
Coming up right after this.
Hello and welcome to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, and today I'm excited to welcome Jessica Topper, award-winning author, former librarian, and current senior development coordinator at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Corey McCants, performer and host of Buffalo Toronto Public Media's digital series, Compact History and Compact Civics. And Naila Ansari Cotillo, professor at Buffalo State University, choreographer and performing artist. Those are just a few of the things all these people do. We'll be talking about more of them as we get into the show. We've got a great show for you today. First up, it is back to school season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pack your snacks, brace yourself, because back to school means, you know, a little bit of organizing and getting back in the grind. Yep. Then we're flipping your page to book scandals, where the drama isn't just in the plot twists. And finally, we're talking about AI. I cannot wait for Naila to talk about this.
My favorite.
But first, what are you talking about in your group chats? What's going on?
Actually, AI, because it was a big discussion. We started back this week for faculty and staff at work, and that was a big topic of conversation in one of our meetings. Like, we have to plan a separate meeting to have that conversation, actually. Yeah. Mm. So it was a very interesting few group chats with different people, like family members, friends, and how they feel about AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't wait to dive into that and also hear some of your stories.
Wild.
Corey, how about you?
Group chats right now. My siblings may be planning a sibling cruise.
Ooh.
I don't really do the cruises. Being on water for that long, I'm not really with that. But my sister took a trip and now she's like all about it. So we'll see about that. And in my friends group, it's about my birthday party. I told you last time I was gonna have it. We had it and it was a blast. It was super dope. So they're, you know, going on and on. Oh man, it was so fun. I'm like, I know. You know what I mean?
I saw the posts and the photos in your story. It was
dope.
You look good. You look like you were celebrating your birthday properly.
Here we go. Yeah. Bossed up, you know?
Popping bottles of seltzer, water.
Yeah, ginger ale, you know.
Didn't even catch that. I love it. How about you, Jess?
Well, I've got a college girls weekend reunion coming up. So we've mostly been talking about, like, what are we going to eat and all that important stuff.
Jessica's always important. Out. Jessica's outside. Jessica's always out with a party.
I know.
I'm like, I need to get myself together. I was on a retreat last time.
Yeah. It just so happens. My one weekend of the summer. I'm actually out tomorrow.
Look at you. Good.
That's awesome.
Good. Yeah, Naila and I got to get better at those.
I know.
Things.
We're terrible.
We were talking about a wine tour. We didn't do that.
I know. So
there's still time, though. Fall's a good time for wine tours.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So, you know, I hate to say that summer is ending, but it's, you know, we're in that window, even though September still sometimes feels like summer in Western New York. But back to school is here. Yes. And Corey, I know, will you be getting back in the classrooms?
I mean, I won't be in the classroom unless, you know, teachers call me in, but I will be. The start of the school year means work is picking up and I will be in my office at the school. So, you know, it's the same thing for the most part.
Yeah.
The same struggles.
And then I know, Naila, you're back at classes.
Yep.
And it's just kind of crazy, though, this time of year, the marketing around back to school. And I'm not in this phase yet, but the school supply situation.
Oh, wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I can just tell you, because I have three that all needed school supplies. and we were in the hundreds of dollars. Literally for like whole kits. And like now they have the thing where like different schools, you can pay for a kit to have it there and just pay a solid $87 for your second grade.
That was for a very limited time.
Very limited time. And then you got to go get out on your own.
Okay. And they're very specific lists, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, I didn't even care at one point because it was like all yellow highlighters. And I'm like, I don't care. It's fine. You're like, we're not going to get kicked out of school because you had an orange highlighter instead of a yellow one. Yeah. They don't have all the packs, and I'm not giving Amazon any more of my money. Yes. So you have a yellow, a red, a pink, and an orange. Yeah. That's how we're riding.
And did you have to label every single one of them?
Oh, no, knew that because everybody shops at the same place. So everyone has the same exact crayons, everything.
So that, well, I was wondering that because I had to get labels for, like, we're not in pre-K yet. We're in daycare, so, but it's like pre-pre-K. Mm-hmm. Whatever they call it. But then I'm looking at these label packs that you can get, and there were labels for like highlighters and stuff for like older kids. I'm like, you have to label that
stuff? Oh, yes, everything. Mm-hmm. Because they will take it. It's like, there's like community disinfectant wipes and facial tissues and all those things. Yeah. And then there's like your stuff specific. That needs to be specific because everybody has the exact same thing. I use that little, like, I actually used to make fun of my mom for using it. She has like a label maker.
Yeah.
It looks like a calculator. And I was like, this is wild. I absolutely took that.
Oh, that's better. You see why.
I'm like, are you serious? I was like, are you really labeling in the kitchen right now? I definitely took that and labeled everything.
Everything.
Each child's name. Full name, too, because if you got two of the same first names, that's you got to differentiate between the two.
I also feel bad because I feel like the school supplies are all gone out of the stores by a certain time, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's true. Yeah. And sometimes you're just like forced to kind of go online and do bulk. And even like, so you're getting more things you need, especially like if there's like pencils. You just have like so many pencils, just having them, not even like mechanical ones. Just the old number twos, all that lead, anti-lead, whatever.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's wild, which is why I was like, what happens with the money that's like, I don't remember having to pay for all these school supplies when I was going to school. I just remember the school having them. And maybe it was something personalized, like your supply bag, maybe.
But. Right. Everything is more expensive and everybody's broke, it seems like. So the schools don't have money, but they also like need stuff. But then there's things where like they say everybody, like I never understood why every kid had to bring in tissue because I was like, my nose is never runny. Like, if the teacher is in charge of their classroom, they have to buy that extra stuff. So if every kid brings in a box of tissues, then they have tissues for the year. You know what I mean? So like in those ways, I get it because a lot of the pressure is on the teachers, but it's still like the school's like, where is this? I don't get it. Where is this money going?
I think all the teachers need to have a stipend so they can have take care of their classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I'd rather parents give some money to their teachers to do whatever they need in their classroom because they're like pulling out of their pockets all the time to like decorate their classrooms for their kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel like the money needs to just go to the teachers. Teachers need to get more money.
There's families that can't. I mean, if you have multiple kids and you're spending $100 a kid on school supplies, that's really hard. It's and then you have to wait for the paycheck to use that. And then there's no school supplies in the stores because they've already flipped to Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's buying them.
Mm-hmm. And the art teacher's like, y'all not coming over here because I'm limited in my supplies. Y'all not coming to take my crayons.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
a lot.
I also have been... Well, I mean, dorm rooms are another thing, but even the locker decorating
the
stuff for the lockers.
There's actual products. Like, you can have a rug for your locker and a chandelier.
Really?
Oh, it's,
for your locker. Like, we used to have to cut stuff out of.
Yeah, like a little battery powered.
Like, why are y'all in the hallways that long?
Yeah.
What's the recess situation like if y'all have all that time in between to grab books?
Yeah.
We hung a mirror.
Mirror.
And that was it. Yeah. Mirror, a little freshener, maybe a little deodorant. Yeah.
If you
want to
cut
that.
Something out, of a magazine, that's fine. But like, man,
there's
that
like
is crazy.
Full living room setups in the locker. In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, here with Jessica Topper, Corey McCants, and Ayla Ansari-Cotillo. And I mean, of course, there's always, we're talking about back to school, and there's always now marketing around the school supplies and the folders. And then don't even get me started about the dorm room stuff. Mm-hmm. Listen to me over here being like, when I went to college.
Back in my day.
You know, there's just whole sections of
four
stores.
Dorms. Yeah.
Four dorms. There's TikToks and like, and it's, I'm like, those do not look like dorm rooms.
No.
And even like on Facebook, there's Facebook groups for the parents of the kids showing up at the colleges.
Wow.
And they're showing pictures of this is where the closet is situated.
Wow.
So they're planning out before they even get to
Do they still have to put their beds on cement blocks, or is that?
That's what I used to have to do, man.
I had a whole, like, we had to share bathrooms.
Yeah.
Like, don't, like, the whole floor. Like,
right, right.
Just, like,
yeah.
So
you
there's
had,
come
like,
up
your
now.
Shower
people have,
caddy.
Like, bathrooms in their, I was like, oh, this is.
Yeah.
It's a
rugs.
Different times.
Different times. Time. Damn. So what does back to school mean for adults? Even for people without kids, September does kind of feel like there's just like a reset in September.
Yeah, you feel it. You do. You feel like the time changed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's, but that's also because, you know, on your way to work or whatever it is, like there's school buses and like as you're driving, you see kids on the side waiting for it. So like all of that feel is there. And then also like Spirit Halloween shops are up everywhere.
Oh,
I mean, like,
that
so
too.
Yeah, that's how you know, like, oh, fall is coming.
It's all marketing.
Yeah. But so, I mean, for me working in education, like for educators and people who work in it, you know what it means because work is back happening. But for those that work all year round, you still feel it. You still can tell it's that time of the year.
Yep. Even as like younger adults and even as kids, you always had this like summer off and then you start a different schedule all the time in September. So I think that's kind of still ingrained in me because even like when you're in college, like you might have a summer job and then you're going back to school.
Cool, right.
Yep.
So you still have that going. And you have a daughter in college, right, Jessica?
Actually, she's out of college. She's going to trade school now.
Oh,
yeah. Wow.
And she's starting up in end of August. Yep.
Mm.
So.
Good for her.
Are you still at the stage where you have to move her in places or is that okay?
No, yep, she's home. She's going to commute from home.
Yeah.
So kind of nice.
Yeah. Yes.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. But she still had to deal with the FAFSA and all the financial aid stuff.
Yeah.
Which,
it's still the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, there's statistics on college enrollment being down, especially in arts and social fields. It looks so. Buff State Niagara University have seen a decline in enrollment this year. UB looks like it's on trend, about 30,000 students. But I mean, these are kind of arbitrary.
Well, yeah, because you take those international students away from UB, that's a whole different ballgame because they have a lot of international students.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, when you have federal government that's highly involved in financial aid and also just a different world, like people were always kind of pushing their kids into computer science and now you don't need people to be go coding anymore. So now there's a New York Times article that came out about how, you know, all these students, you know, were pushed into wanting to be computer science majors and now they can't find jobs because, well, I don't need you to code anymore. So it's an interesting shift. I think higher ed in general is just in the it's trying to find itself in this new age, not just of like AI, but just in the age of a new administration that isn't necessarily supportive of higher education and doesn't want a lot of people to get educated. So it's a fight that across the board, I think, you know, everyone is really feeling it, like decline in enrollment and retention numbers are across the country. It's not even just locally here.
Yeah, no, it's not just here. It's everywhere. And then even programs being cut.
Because you have to do deactivations, which is like you basically are graduating through that last year. So, you know, you take that cut off in January. We're not taking any more majors, but you have to let them graduate and then, you know, you kind of figure out what happens after that. But, you know, students are trying to figure out, like, is college for them? Do I even need college?
I think a lot of it is kids not even wanting to go because I'm telling you, 18-year-old me, 17-year-old me, like, if I could be an influencer,
right?
Do I need college? Like, I want to be an actor, but, like, I could just be discovered from streaming, you know what I mean?
Right.
So if that's the case or if I think that's a possibility, it's a lot of kids like, do I even need college, you know?
Well, because there's certain things that you need people to do, right?
Yeah.
There's always going to be things where you need a human in the loop is what they call it. But it's a struggle now, and I see it too, because the one thing I think people are forgetting about college specifically in education, that is it is there to teach you to learn, to think differently, to critically think. And I think it's a maturing mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids don't need that. Like some kids are kind of, you know, naturally mature and like, all right, I want to go and I want to work and I want to get into this space. You have a whole lot of kids now that are in that funky position that are like, I don't want to go to college. And they just like, I need to figure out who I am and all this other stuff. Because once they do go into college, that is also a hit in the head because you are dealing with professors and faculty and staff that are going to treat you like adults. So I find that there's an immaturity that's also not allowing a lot of kids to feel comfortable going to college either, because they're like, oh, I wasn't ready for to really be on my own.
Like
they don't know, like your parents, like they're so used to like they have a grade and oh, I'm just gonna send it to your parents, and they're like their parents are on them. Like you can't do that in college. Like your parents can't get your information. There's a whole you know, liability that goes into that.
Well, and then you make, you know, if you are in college for a year where you don't really know if you want to be there, or you are maybe not doing well, that's a year that you're paying for. You know, maybe when you're not ready yet.
And my kid was a class of 2020 kid leaving high school.
Oh, yes.
So her college experience was so different. And I couldn't give her any advice because I hadn't gone through that type of isolation. So it really got her thinking, missing that component of bonding with her peers. And she said, "Why?" The guidance counselor just said, "You got to go to college. Like, that's what's next." And nobody talked about trade school. And, you know, definitely an option.
Those supportive environments are extremely helpful in college. Like I know, with, you know, the departments I'm in, that we really try to focus on helping, like nurturing the whole. And theater and Africana studies are by nature departments and programs like that. Not every department is like that.
Right.
You know, we know all of our students. We are with them all the time in rehearsals and at night. And, you know, all of our students in Africana, like we're processing today, so we need to make sure we know where they are in case they get arrested. Like those, all of those things are very, are real for our departments, but it, I don't know that that has translated in every single department in every single field on how do you build that relationship, because these kids, particularly COVID kids, they have to have that additional support because they really were home by themselves, alone and depressed, trying to figure it out. Just like we all were as an adult. And now they're trying to go into a whole new world after just literally sitting at home for 2 years, not having, you know, proms and graduations and all of those kind of things. It's traumatic for a lot of young folks.
Corey, you work with younger kids. How do you help them think about, you know, the decisions they have to make as they get older and get into college years? Because that's a lot for younger kids.
I think it is. And I think you get a sense of like where their mind is. Like by eighth grade, you get a sense of like if they're even thinking about it, and the ones that are, the ones that are like, it's not really an option or don't want it. But like, so for me, you know, when I first moved back to Buffalo, I was teaching at a charter school. And it was like fourth and fifth grade. You know, we built a year each time. But like those fourth graders are now, I think, juniors in high school now. So it's like really crazy because they were, you know, like even seeing them in fourth grade and in fifth grade and then going through COVID and then they're bounced back versus the fourth graders that came in after or during COVID, even though it's like a 2 year difference, the, like you were talking about maturity, psychologically, it is just, it is insane. And so like, where I'm at now dealing with eighth and under, these eighth graders, they, you know, their life was, all they knew was COVID and beyond. And so to talk to a junior who I had before, you know, who was in school before COVID, or to talk to an eighth grader who only knows COVID, it is such a crazy difference. In what they expect and what they think is possible and like the practicality of it all. And so it's like, you do your best, you know what I mean? You do your best as an adult to be like, look, I don't want to force, I don't want to be a guidance counselor forcing a kid to feel like they have to go to college, but I also don't want every kid thinking that they can just be a streamer or like, or to have a
That's a whole nother conversation. Because
maybe just have a backup player.
Listen,
like,
we're gonna,
see, you know what I mean? Maybe.
We're gonna dig into that a little bit
talent
later.
Talent is real too. Listen, like, we need but, to not have people thinking they're experts with no expertise. That's a problem.
Everybody,
I like that line.
That's a really great way to put it. Because everybody has an opinion, and in today's time, everybody can voice their opinion and publish their opinion when that might not need to be what's happening. And so these kids feel like, yeah, well, I'll just do this. You know what I mean? I've had so many students tell me like, I'm just gonna, you know, be this. I'm like, well, do you do anything now? Like, no, I will when it's time. Like, whoa. You're 14 now. I feel like if you're gonna do this, like, you know, most athletes got discovered in high school. They were on their way after, like, so if you're 14 and never was on a basketball team, I don't know how it's going to happen, bro. You might want to, you know, but it's just a difference.
I think we're going to get into those conversations, too, when we talk about AI in schools. We're going to, you know, first, before, when we come back from the break, though, We're going to get into some book scandals. I know you all did your summer reading lists, like you promised. So we're going to jump into books a little bit before we dive into the AI situation. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about books, some scandals. So don't go away. Group Chat on BTPM NPR. We'll be right back. Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about. Thanks for joining us again on Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, and I'm joined by Jessica Topper, award-winning author, former librarian, and current senior development coordinator at Buffalo Toronto Public Media, Corey McCants, performer and host of Buffalo Toronto Public Media's digital series Compact History and Compact Civics, and Naila Ansari-Cotillo, professor at Buffalo State University, choreographer and performing artist. We were, you know, just discussing back to school. I know you all did great on your summer reading list. Which actually adults are doing summer reading lists now.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It makes more sense now, honestly. Yeah. Like now I like to read. When I was a kid, I didn't even want to read.
Yeah.
There's even bookstores that do like a pizza party if you read enough books, just like you did in grade school. Yeah.
See, that that's because Jessica's so really into reading books. Yeah. She knows that.
And I like pizza. I do like pizza.
I'm a very, very big fan of pizza.
Everybody remembers the pizza parties or the free little pizzas you got for the summer reading
list. Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. We had Domino's or Pizza Hut, I think.
I was probably a generation before you guys, but we had, well, not a generation, but a decade, but we had book balloons.
Book balloons.
You read a certain number of books and you got a postcard. And then at the end of the summer, this is so bad for the climate and the environment, but we launched balloons, helium balloons from behind the school with the postcards tied to them. And then people could mail them back so we could see how far they traveled.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So that was pretty neat. That's awesome. But there hasn't been like a good substitute that would.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just finished a book.
Oh, come on, you guys. Was that the one you were reading before?
I don't know.
No, okay, yeah.
I was like drawn. I was in the library with my son and I was like drawn to this book and it said Unmask Alice. And it was basically about. Do you guys remember it was around for a while, Go Ask Alice, which was actually written in like the 70s.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it was basically supposedly a journal about this girl that had in high school that had became addicted to drugs. I think at the time it was LSD. And then her journal just stopped. So, you know, she passes away. And it was like, I remember my grandmother finding this book that I read and she's like flipping through this book. I was like a preteen and she's like, you should not be reading what is in this book. But then they were kind of using it as like a teaching guide. Like all parents need to read this book. Caution. This is what your kids are doing.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out it might be all false. So that's what this book was about. Like it was like a fabricate. It was like an author that Beatrice Sparks, she kind of like made up the story. It might have been based on somebody that she knew, but it was never really confirmed. But there's two Library of Congress cards on it, and one says nonfiction and one says fiction. So,
that's interesting.
So, yeah.
And I remember a badge of honor. You carried that book. I can still picture the cover. It was very dark and it had just like one eye.
Yes.
But the fact that it said anonymous as the author,
yes.
You know, there was nothing in the copyright info that identified anybody. So as a kid, you were like,
Right.
Yep. Who did this?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then she kept kind of putting these books out and making up like the endorsements.
This is like the world of book authors.
There was another book that she fabricated about kids being involved in cults because, like, you know, they couldn't explain, like, teenage mental health. So they were like, oh, these kids must be involved in cults because that would, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
But it was a whole thing. So, but I didn't know about this until I saw this book. So recently, The Salt Path, which I haven't read this. Do you know about this, Jessica? It was a memoir about an author, her ill husband, homelessness. And then that is allegedly now not true.
Yeah, there was like a big expose, I guess, in a newspaper to explain there were some inconsistencies. And it had to do with both his illness, like the chronic illness that he had was, you know, how could he be marching across England? That was their whole thing. They were doing a trek after they lost their home. And something about how they lost their home as well was a little vague, whether they had had some financial issues, I guess. Yeah.
So it's memoirs sell. Like, we're drawn to real stories. So there is like a whole discussion around how you market, even if these publishing companies know that it might not be. How do they verify that this something is a memoir or something is nonfiction? Because they know memoirs sell, so they're just putting that memoir stamp on it. Is that something we have to worry about? So when you read a story, are you more drawn to something that's real? Or do you feel like cheated if you find out a story isn't real because it's the same words? Would you still be
For me, there's definitely a difference if you're hearing an amazing story that is real versus something that someone just made up. I feel very strongly, we may have even talked about this on the show, and it probably doesn't deserve the attention I give it or the like spirit I give it. The story Push by Sapphire, and the movie Precious, derived from Push, a story by Sapphire, whatever. I was never a fan of it. And it was because when I first heard about it, I was like, wow, is this like the true story of someone? Like, that's crazy. But then when it wasn't, I was like, so a guy just made up the worst stuff he could think about a person and was like, yeah, and this is a story. I'm like, I mean, I get it, but I'm like, you just made up a bunch of messed up stuff. Like, it's just made up. So I just didn't understand, like, the, you know, spirit behind it. Yeah, like, why everybody was on. Because I'm like, it's just a made up story. So in that sense, I do think, like, well, if someone overcame something and it was a true story, I'm like, this person shows perseverance. This is amazing. Like, you can look at this person as like proof that you can do it. But if it's made up, it's like,
I know.
You can make anything
just
up.
Just be fiction, right?
Yeah, like,
that's what it is. Because I think people read memoirs so that they can see that they can get through themselves, especially when people are having a I mean, at least that's where I look at. Like, I just read Malcolm X's autobiography again. And you just read through, you know, obviously given what's happening in the climate, I'm like, I need some motivation to like really fight the good fight. And that, like, if I found out that was, I don't know what I would do. Like, I teach it in my class. Like, I don't know what I would do. I would be like devastated, because you feel this like level of empathy for someone that really has gone through something. And then you also equally feel inspired that you can, you know, you can fight the good fight to keep going, because everybody has these downfalls. I feel like it's unfair when you do that to your readers, because we get so invested. It's our time. Right. And it's also like our imagination. I think reading's so personal that when you take that away, it's like a therapist lying to you. A little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you just shared all of this information to someone, and then they gave you this advice, and you found out it was like, the advice was like bad.
Not as mess with you. Right.
And it was, and you didn't go through that. And,
right.
Because you can kind of, you can always relate to struggle in some ways, and then you feel like empathetic, and you actually feel emotions, I think, when you're reading along with these.
I've cried reading books. I mean, I get very emotional sometimes. Well, if it's well written.
Exactly.
You know, that's another.
And there's a, you know, your memory, you do sort of embellish things over time. You start telling that story and it gets a little bolder and bigger. But there's a difference between that and actually making stuff up. Or taking advantage of, you know, vulnerable, you know, exploiting people.
Right.
Who might be suffering from something, and it could do real harm if you've fabricated a tale.
I mean, like, doing weed once and then like LSD are like, that's a big.
You know?
Well, so that book, A Million Little Pieces, this was like kind of like the start. Remember that whole scandal? Because it was in Oprah's book club.
Yep, I remember that.
And he had this, like, these opening scenes, also a book about addiction, and like these opening scenes in the book where he's on a plane and he passes out and he was beaten up and he didn't know where he was. And like, people that were struggling with those things really like grabbed onto it. And then there was a lot of talk about, oh, this being an honest memoir of what people go through. And then it turned out to be fictional. Like, kind of as you were saying, people felt a little cheated. And then he was trying to say, okay, well, maybe I didn't remember things correctly. So that was the first thing. So people were like, okay, maybe you know.
You were high.
None of that.
Didn't Oprah like confront him about it?
Yeah, she did. I didn't know if they did an interview or something, but I remember it was like a big to do because, well, it makes her look bad too, because it's like, well, did you not fact check before?
Yeah, you Oprah.
You got this man millions of dollars.
And that's like another level of endorsement, because you're like, wow, Oprah, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, it's got to be real. She basically has like the FBI to investigate.
Right,
if
right.
She needed to, right? Yeah.
I think, you know, in the end, like publishing companies are first level of reading a story. They're thinking about marketing.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, for sure. You know? Yeah. It's yeah. sell, and if it's interesting, and then if it's good, like third.
And if somebody, right? And if somebody says it's a memoir, they're like, oh, that memoir is going to sell. Are they really yeah. going to dive into
it? But it's also really difficult right. to be yeah. a writer and an author. So I think there is that expectation that, oh, like, you write so you read well and you're really educated and you're mm-hmm. intelligent. So I think we do have that expectation of writers that quote unquote make it. But then, I mean, there's a whole other thing on like the New York Times yeah, bestseller now where like all these celebrities are writing.
Yeah. Mm.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
But when I think yeah. of like someone like Jessica is like a real writer, I'm like, yeah,
Jessica.
Well, Jessica. Like, well, but you know what I mean? There's such a yeah. like, there's such, because I know how long it takes to, mm-hmm. to write and to really edit and like that kind of focus and discipline. That's like always like inspiring to me yeah. when I meet an author that yeah. really can do that and have that kind of imagination.
Yep.
That when I find out someone's not doing that, I'm like, mm-hmm. This is bad.
Yeah. yeah.
This is not good.
Yeah. Well, I think with the nonfiction, I mean, they do have a legal team that will sit there and they'll go through it. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, I think The Salt Path was actually published by one of my publishers. But, you know, with novels, with fiction, they're making sure, like, you didn't plagiarize this.
Did right.
you
ever, right.
Or copyright. They'd rather, yeah. you know, you not try to use music in your book and
right.
get yeah. dinged for that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I know that they put a lot on the author. Like
right,
you do
right.
your due yes. diligence.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And you sign a contract if you're a nonfiction author saying like this is accurate yeah. to the best of my knowledge.
Right.
Well, and is a biography that is co-written or, you know, there are some people who wrote their biographies and they are not written by that person. Mm-hmm. If a person writes an autobiography about themselves and we know they did not write this joint by themselves, is that still an autobiography?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's ghostwriters.
Ghostwriters, yeah. That,
but
yeah.
that's not...
So that would be
that,
a yeah, that's biography
then,
right?
I think there is something where people need help writing, because the problem is like some people, when they do an autobiography, you want it to come from the person, but sometimes right. they just don't necessarily write well.
I get mm-hmm. that, but what I'm saying is does that not make it less of an autobiography in the same way that this memoir is... I mean, some stuff is straight up yeah. made up, but talking about the specifics of what stuff is and what classifies it, this autobiography is not that if you didn't write it, even though it's about you.
That's true.
And so it's like,
I feel that.
And is it a biography or is there another term that we need to come up with now? It can't be a memoir, right?
Oral because history.
Oral history.
Oral history. Yeah.
Inspired by.
When people write their own autobiographies that you're interested, because it sounds like them and you're yeah. like, this yeah. is believe
yeah.
your voice.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can get an editor to be like, okay, your grammar's bad. Let me just mm-hmm. like, let's work this out a little
yeah.
bit. But it does, yeah, that's to your point, it's like, if someone has a ghostwriter, I guess that's again kind of feeling like, okay, but you didn't really
right.
Didn't
that's
really
right. That's the R&B
this.
Rap thing. I'm telling but you, man. Is, we, I yeah, don't know if we're judging it on an even scale.
You know, to Jessica's point about the fact checking is like, whose responsibility is it? But if you're signing a contract and saying something is nonfiction and you researched
right.
it, so
right.
then that kind of goes back on the author.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
yeah.
What about stories? I know, Jessica, you write primarily fiction. But there might be stories that are inspired by
oh, yeah.
things that have
yeah.
happened.
So it might get put in my novel if I'm overhearing a conversation. It might go in there.
Do you talk about that? Because, like, do you think that draws people in a little bit more, that something might be based on an experience, or because it's fiction, do you just leave that out?
I mean, there's always that like disclaimer in the beginning of the book saying like, what is it? I'm trying to remember
all
the words.
All names have been changed.
No, not even that. Any resemblance to a
right.
person living or dead is purely coincidental.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've definitely read books where I'm like, that's
yeah,
not
I know who this is. I yeah. know who this is.
It's not coincidental. But, yeah. I usually take like the story seed, like of
yes,
a little
yeah.
idea, and then I'll just sprout it out bigger. Mm. So
yeah.
I would hope nobody could recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mother-in-law did ask me once, like, is that based on me?
Oh, shoot.
That evil mother-in-law. No.
No.
Not at all. No.
Of course not.
The answer's always no.
The J-Lo and Jane Fonda movie that inspired yeah. me.
Okay. So apparently a few large publishers or high profile nonfiction projects have dedicated fact checkers. So HarperCollins and Random House sometimes do this. But I'm glad you shed light on mm-hmm. the fact that mm-hmm. you do have to sign these contracts. Now, what about legacy books that are past stories and interpretations of that? How deep do you dive into seeing who's writing these?
Well, it depends on what it's for. If it's yeah. just for my leisure,
yeah.
that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for my students and scholarship, that's a whole nother thing,
yeah.
and that's actually
mm-hmm.
very important. Because
mm-hmm.
you can have, now it's like how many books are written on like Abe Lincoln?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's like a lot of people.
Yeah.
a lot of them, I also don't think they're probably the best historians to be writing
right.
about Abe Lincoln. I think it's important in that aspect to understand who's writing, depending on what you're reading for and why yes. you're reading it.
Really
yeah.
good point. Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like that's the first thing that like media companies and even before like the whole AI era and the first things that publishers or media companies were cutting were fact checkers. And they were kind of like leaving it on the writer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there was like a trend of that already starting before all of this. But I mean, now I feel like it's more important than ever, especially I just can't wait for Nayla to talk about AI because I know oh, she's got stories yes. about this.
So many stories.
But there's a lot of commercial pressures around mm-hmm. publishing mm-hmm. and creating, you know, and timelines where there's just expected to be content, content, content. So do you feel like maybe that's inhibiting some of the final stages in putting things out there?
Well, now I feel like the book world is so commercialized in a way that it's just not about good writers anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually think it's really hard to find well-written books now because so many people yeah. are writing books and like they're just getting, you know, like, oh, I want to start a publishing company. So mm-hmm. come on, let me just write about my experience mm-hmm. yeah. and put it out there, which is why I think you do have these like legendary authors or people that have written more than one book. I feel like now we're going to a world where people are trying to separate like more commercialized things mm-hmm. from what's actually really well written and yeah. just really great stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because we can go down a wrong rabbit hole. And I feel like books are kind of like our last thing right now that's keeping us kind of honest.
Well, when we come back from the break, we are going to talk about how AI is affecting some of these things. Mm-hmm. In particular, since we are in back to school time.
Writing.
Students and papers. So group chat on BTPM NPR. We'll be right back. Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about. Welcome back to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, here with my guests, Jessica Tapper, award-winning author, former librarian, and current senior development coordinator at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Corey McCants, performer and host of Buffalo Toronto Public Media's digital series, Compact History and Compact Civics, and Nayla Ansari-Cotillo, professor at Buffalo State University, choreographer and performing artist. I think that AI has come up so much in group chat, but now that back to school is happening and there's been a lot of discussions about use of AI mm-hmm. in schools and papers with students, and I know we have a great group here to talk about this. So what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, I'll just break this up because I've just literally been having conversations about this, especially with like my colleagues. Kelly has been cheating off Kevin since the beginning of time. So we need to just wrap that up right now. It's like it may be feeling like it's happening more at like a faster pace, but like people have literally cheated for forever. So mm-hmm. that notion of it, we need to stop because that's what's been happening. Mm-hmm. People have also been using AI for over almost 50 years now, not realizing like anytime you go on your Microsoft Word or anything that you're using right now, AI is implemented in it and it's like, oh, your period should be here or your comma should be here, grammar, punctuation, all those things. So this idea that like AI is new, does it function in a different way that people are used to? Yes. Is it this thing that's going to like just totally take over the world? No. I don't even know why that's a conversation. And I think if people just actually tried to learn what AI is, they would feel a lot better. I use AI all the time. And as an academic, as a scholar, your job is to ask good questions. AI is only as smart as you are. So I have to teach our students how to ask and how to prompt good questions and lines of inquiry so that you can develop and build these fields. What are you doing to work with the AI so that you can become a brighter person?
Okay.
It's taking our intelligence. Like, that's where it's coming from. It's coming from us. Like, it's scanning all of our intelligence, PhDs, whoever you can think of. That's where they're getting the intelligence from. And then it just magnifies at a faster rate than what we can do. Like, same thing with calculators and email. When everybody was, like, losing their mind when people had to use Texas Instruments in the classroom. Or, like, an email came out. It's the same thing. It just feels like it's out of control because of so much that it can do. but we need to embrace it and learn how to use it, as opposed to just being like, nobody can use it at all. I think it's actually very detrimental to not have students learn how to use AI, because you are setting them back a lot.
So that's an interesting angle, because, you know, if you get a student that turns in a paper that you know is AI and it's bad and it's incorrect, so instead of saying don't use AI, you teach them how to use AI.
Yes. And also, we have had Turnitin for years, decades. There have been ways to check plagiarism from since I can remember, since I've been in academia. All of these things have already existed. People have plagiarized for a very long time. Mm-hmm. It looks different because it's not just like a bibliography, like, oh, that looks odd, or like, oh, this quote is wrong, so, and I don't see it cited. So the plagiarism looks different, but plagiarism has always existed. And I think the issue is people don't understand how to look at a policy. But I can look at a paper and absolutely tell that a student used AI, because I didn't even talk about what they're talking about in class. Right? Like, and I give this example all the time, that I have a colleague, he was teaching a Black philosophy class, and like students were using like these like white Stoics as examples. He's like, I know I didn't teach that this class. Right? And so a lot of it is, to me, it's a teaching mechanism for our students to understand, first of all, why do you feel like you need the AI? That's the first question. So there's a cultural thing that has to change, to me, in the classroom, to understand why AI is being used, not to just throw an essay together that you know you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because I know that it's not you. And if you put any more of those dashes in there that you know, like, there's so many things for us to know. You have to get on the other side of it. What I teach our students when it comes to AI is, it's almost like reversing it.
Yeah.
Here, if I'm teaching math, let's just say, and the ChatGPT gives me all the answers, well, I want you to tell me why that's right.
Yeah.
That's a different way of looking at it, and it still requires them to think, okay, well, this is the answer that I got. Okay, now let me go backtrack, because you have to fact check what it is. So now you actually have to be more of an expert nowadays than you ever had to be before.
Wow, I am just blown away right now.
So there's so much of what you said that I agree with. There's so much. And I think the biggest point is that as a society, whatever, I feel like we need to focus more on teaching how to work with, as opposed to just blocking, because that will never be the case. As people, especially as students, they will figure out a way around. So this, like, no phones, they will figure out a way to have phones in class.
Right.
No AI, they will figure out a way. And so I totally agree with that point. I do think that some of the understanding is like, AI is different than a search engine.
Right.
And there are differences. One of the things that I think people who either aren't, you know, literate in it, one of the things that scares them is the idea that, like, you can prompt AI to write a completely fiction or nonfiction novel. So, like, to your point of, like, it's different, but it's not different in the same. I think it's truly different, because we've never been able to use technology in these ways. Mm-hmm. In the depths that it goes, it's almost like entering the unknown, like the dark web versus the internet, right?
Right,
like,
right.
People think the internet is like this. It's like, the internet is 5%. Like, the internet you use, your Google and all this stuff, is 5% of what the internet is. 95% is the dark web, and it's very different. I think that's close to what it is. So, like, two parts of the same beast, I guess. And so the first thing to me is, yes, learn how to use it and how to work with it. But it's very difficult, I think, to teach a certain age that, because real life things have to come with the responsibility of using something like that.
Right.
So, like, before you understand why you think things are important, if you're trying to use something like this, you're not going to connect with why you should or shouldn't do certain things. You have to be at a seventh grade level, you know, when seventh graders are the ones that, like, start to get embarrassed,
right, around
that age. So before you know embarrassment, you'll do anything, whether it's on camera or not. So teaching a sixth grader or a fifth grader, like, why you shouldn't post certain things doesn't make sense to them because they don't get the longevity. They don't get what embarrassment is.
Right.
So in that same way, I think trying to teach certain levels, whether it be, I mean, and this might not be age. This might just be like competency. But if you're not at that level of competency to say you need to use AI in this way as a tool, not as the answer, if it doesn't connect, it doesn't connect. And I think, like, that's where the fear is coming from. There's so many kids like, but I don't want to write the paper. To understand, like, why I shouldn't use it to write the paper doesn't make sense, because I don't want to write the paper. And they're not thinking about, like, well, when you're in real life and have a conversation and someone asks you this and you have no idea why, like, it's going to be a problem. It's just not connecting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, like, that is a little bit where the worry is for me. I do have, I'm usually an optimistic person, I think. You probably realize that. So like, I do have hope that this generation, being that they're like born into this, they will be far better than we are. Right now, I do see why that is a bit of a worry.
A worry.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Well, and you brought up some interesting points too. I mean, I think teenagers and preteens, you know, one of the things with everything that's really hard to teach them is they live so in the moment. You know, adults are always worried about things 10 steps ahead. You know, teenagers are very in the moment. So they don't think about like what a social media post that they're doing right now, how it could affect them a week from now. How am I going to deal with this situation?
That's right. Right now.
Especially.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say these chatbots interact with you so different than just a search engine. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you are kind of going with a back and forth, it's almost like having, you know, a friend, a companion. And that's where I think, you know, it can blur the lines with kids.
And I always say, too, it's like, outside of just the school functionality of it that I always kind of go back and forth with, of because I think that's also a teacher faculty thing that we have to figure out of how to learn it. Some of the things that you all are talking about, I mean, it still goes to say that home training is the first training.
Well, I 100%
because
agree. Yes.
I think if we start a world where these kids also have access to AI without also understanding the fundamentals culturally of how things should function, the right and wrongs of things, you do get caught up in that, which is why therapy is so big for ChatGPT. And Sam Altman recently had to do an interview and was like, okay, this is not HIPAA compliant. So if we need to go to court, all of this is absolutely free reign for conversations that can be used against you. And I think that people don't understand is like, there are certain things that are HIPAA compliant. You do like Google or Amazon, stuff like that, ChatGPT is not.
No.
And it also is not things for you to get medical advice from or legal advice from. It's not like you can't ask it those things, but you need to, I don't know, call an expert.
Yes.
Right. Well, and I think that's the home training part of it.
Yes. You know, the home training or telling people, you know, maybe if you have a child that or a friend that's considering therapy and then they're going to try to do this AI chat, maybe that those are the discussions we need to be having. In case you just joined us, you're listening to Group Chat. I'm your host, Bentley, here with Jessica Topper, Corey McCants, and Naila Ansari-Cotillo. You know, we were talking about, you know, writing, and then we got into the chatbots and the therapy and even legal. So it's like what areas you might need an actual professional. And as you said, Naila, earlier, like there has to be a person involved in these things. So Illinois is the first state to ban AI from providing mental health therapy. I even think about how with a lot of the teletherapy that started happening, there seemed to be, you know, during COVID, because there was such a shortage for therapists that it seemed like all of a sudden these therapists were popping up everywhere. And I'm like, wait, did these people just get degrees overnight?
Yeah,
like,
how? Right.
Yeah.
So even Naila talking about earlier that like cheating's always happened, you know, I think to just this boom of all of a sudden these online therapists that popped up. And it's like, how do we find out if their credentials? I mean, everybody's on Psychology Today now.
Right.
You know, that list, that's, but like AI therapy does scare me a little bit. And then also the AI being used in legal documents where you can, I actually tested this out. You can have a legal document drawn up for you in AI. It might be pretty accurate, but if you go to use that in court or you go to use that in a situation, it's not going to hold up because the language might not be there because you don't have a person then checking that.
If you don't know anything about it, then you're completely relying on AI, which ChatGPT, at least it used to tell you, like, I'll get this like 85%, like up to 80% right.
Yeah.
And so if it's telling you that, but you blend in this program like sounding like a person, it sounds like an advisor to you. You blend in you not knowing anything about the subject, so everything sounds right. And then you blend in like, well, I just want the answer. And like that is a concoction for, yep, this is it. I myself have had, air quote, like legal document, like something that I'm trying to, like a contract. But after I have this done and like it's helped me understand, I now want to bring it to a lawyer because I don't, like, I do think money is another thing. Like, I'll talk to an online, a chat bot, therapist because I don't have money for a therapist. It's like some things you want to spend the money on. For me, I don't want to meet with a lawyer to ask this question for him to say, this is what you got to do. So I'm like, I'll use this thing how I want, keep the names out of it. I never like giving it my information.
Right.
But then when I have it, I'm like, all right, now I'll take this to someone and they can tell me what's right or wrong or make the edits. But like to go from AI made this and now it's out to the world is just like, but the home training thing or, you know, maybe it's just being an adult and knowing what you know, that's not everybody.
And
that's
AI not everybody. Has a good first draft of something.
Yeah,
right.
Like
exactly.
It's, and then you keep exactly. prompting it to give you better drafts of whatever it is. But I think with the mental health, I think the question we have to have is why do people feel more comfortable talking to a computer than they do a human?
That's yeah. it. That's the key.
And addressing the shortage of actual trained professionals.
Mm-hmm. So right. the noise is going to cut this. In some ways, I can understand why people feel that comfort level because no one's in your business and you feel like it's not judging you. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. regardless mm-hmm. of how people feel, it can take a long time to actually find a very good therapist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so what is Illinois now going to do if you have 100,000 people that are no longer going to be talking to their chatbot therapist? People want therapy, but are you going to supplement for folks that can't afford it?
Mm-hmm. Well, like and right. And, you know, the wait lists forever for therapists
oh, yes.
were just you're having a crisis or you're, you know, maybe not a crisis to where you have to call like 911, but you're in a moment and you are at a point in your life where you like, I need therapy now. And then you mm-hmm. get put on a 3-month wait list. Mm-hmm. Yes, the chat bot is a little scary. I don't know how couples therapy would work mm. on that. That's like a new trend. I'm like, oh, how... And like, is it the person asking the question, is it going to gravitate more towards like that person?
Well,
and like,
it does try to like, please you.
Which is why, you know, just FYI for people, when you say please, it actually makes it function more. So it takes more energy. So you don't need to tell your
I've
bot,
heard
please.
That. I've
like,
heard that
oh, you don't,
yeah, you don't
nice.
Need to be overcomplicated.
Okay,
but I thought when the robots take over, they'll remember that I was so nice to them.
I say please.
You can just be standard. I need to do blah, 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 blah. But when you say please, it actually makes it go overload, like it's okay. Well, I got to get this done really fast, and then so energy wise, in terms of like climate, that also creates.
All right, I'll be more assertive with.
Yeah, just know
if you don't mind, could you please maybe think about? Like,
well, I'm just trying to be nice to Alexa because I don't want my son. I yell at Alexa a lot, and then he starts to yell at Alexa. So he thinks that's how you talk to people. So I got
reel
that
in a little bit.
I think we have to get stronger with common sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have a large population that wants to use AI because they don't want to flex common sense and quite frankly a little lazy.
Laziness, yeah.
That's really what it is. I don't want to leave to go somewhere. And some of it I'm not knocking if it's depression and mental health issues that they're dealing with. However, a lot of it is you're also just lazy because some of the stuff you don't need the AI to do for you, right? Like, and there's difference between like generative AI and like AI that's like task-based LLMs, right? Like Degrassi was talking about this. Like, I don't want a robot to make my coffee, right? And now we're getting into a world where people are just being lazy and want them to like, you know, the vacuum thing is kind of cute, but you know, like I don't need you to do my laundry. Yeah. I don't need you to, there's certain things that we need to do.
We need to be able to do
We need
ourselves.
To be able to do on our own and that we need to not rely on AI. And I think this is where it's starting to get funky because people are using it for laziness.
Yeah.
And what they're going to promote it as, they're promoting it as we're going to make these robots do this to free you up to do more. But what's going to happen is the robots doing laundry so you can go watch Love Island.
Right,
and that's
right.
not
right.
the case, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
And that's not, but that's how they're going to promote it.
Right.
So I completely agree, yeah.
Well, that's a good spot to find out what you guys are going to do this weekend. What are your weekend plans? Are you got more space now because you're using AI to do your laundry or just chill out or watch Love Island?
Well, one thing AI is not doing for me is putting up this show for Dreamgirls.
Yes!
So it's opening September 10th. So
Let's
we
go.
Are
so.
Strong in rehearsals without AI.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
You are in it.
In the thick of it. So we're getting ready to go over to the theater in tech, but we got the show up on his feet and legs in less than 2 weeks. So that was awesome. Amazing. Big cast. So get tickets.
I'm so excited.
Yes.
Yeah. Those tickets.
I am currently writing and getting ready for the next episode of Compact History.
Woo-hoo!
We got like a little standalone episode, so that should be really great. And I'm working with my boy Travis, who's been on the show before.
Yeah.
With a podcast. He has this book, what is it, Mafia, Buffalo vs. the Multiverse. We're gonna be doing some really cool things with it. And he asked me to help him. So this week I'm going to be getting all on board with that.
Nice.
So hopefully I'll have some more things to tell
Always.
You. Yeah.
I can't wait.
What and about going you, back Jessica? To human interaction and having relationships. These were the girls that I met freshman year, dorm, Porter Hall, Buff State.
Wow.
So yeah, five of my girlfriends.
That's amazing.
Going to kick back. And relax.
I
let's
love
go,
it.
Jeff, let's
I
go.
Am going to see Oasis in Toronto.
Hey.
And then I'm
They're
off for
there?
A week. Yeah, but nice. I'm not really technically on vacation because daycare is closed for a week before school starts
again.
Yeah,
so, no, that's,
so
yeah.
I'm just not here.
Right.
Still working.
Well, that wraps up today's episode of Group Chat for now. If you want to continue the conversation, make sure you follow us on Instagram at BTPMNPR. Also, check us out on the video podcast on Buffalo Toronto Public Media's YouTube channel. I'd like to thank my guests, Jessica Topper, Corey McCants, and Naila Ansari-Cotillo. I'm your host, Bentley. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.